Ron and
Brian,
a voice of this generation.
Everybody, and welcome to episode 54 of the Ron and Brian podcast. I am Ron, as always, joined by the man who was the penis double for Dr. Manhattan in the Watchmen movie, Brian. Brian, how's it hanging tonight?
You know I only watch Marvel movies, right?
Right, I understand that, but you
asked. Why would you make a Watchmen reference?
How could you not have seen Watchmen at some point? Your penis was literally all over the place.
Never saw Watchmen. Was there really like... Were there dong shots?
I mean, there was dong. Dr. Manhattan has no use for clothing.
Really?
Yeah.
Was he adequately endowed?
He was hung like the island of Manhattan.
Oh, well then I think that might be your first intro that is actually complimentary of me.
It was very complimentary.
I'll take it. It's
all real too, ladies. Keep that in
there
mind.
There you go.
All right, so here we are.
Also real is the uncontrollable sobbing afterwards.
Well,
I mean, that's...
Everybody likes a good cry. Like a sensitive man.
Listen, it's, you know, you just... I get to such a... How do I say this? An emotionally vulnerable place. I mean, when you have your knees pressed up against your chest and, you know, you feel your weight and somebody else's weight on you... I mean, you're very vulnerable at that moment, and you know afterwards, it's hard to get back to normal for me.
I think the listeners like it when you open up like that. We should do that more often.
And the sailor that I met Sunday night, he also appreciated the way I opened up.
All right, let's get things rolling here with episode 54.
Drink of the week.
На здоровье.
Drink of the week.
Sláinte.
Pause.
Drink of the week. Drink of the week.
You know,
drink
I actually have week. People reach out to me and say that they like the drink of the week theme even more than beef of the week, which I thought, you know, as I've often
wrong.
Mentioned. What's that?
They're wrong. Well, no, I'm just going to say this.
Okay.
I think one of the problems that I believe we as a society at this moment have is we are automatically just kind of drawn towards the new shiny thing, and treat the old, the stable, the tried and true, the rock of the show. They treat that like it's an old hat.
I got you. I think they were doing it more complimentary though. But I get what you're saying.
I'm not saying that it's a bad intro. What I'm saying is, you know, the idea of a cow mooing right in perfect step with the theme music, I don't know how you can beat that.
I mean, I'm with you. So,
what are you drinking, Ron?
We may or may not have done a poll this week, so we're doing. We did bring your own craft beer, and in honor of where we were hanging out this past Saturday night, I have a bottle of Bubba's Sour Tea Bag. This was their 2017 rendition. They actually did two that year, but this one is a sour ale with strawberries, aged in a Shiraz barrel. Ice cold, very, even a little bit more sour than the one we drank, the 2018 version on Saturday.
See, I think it's odd that you and I both went to sour beers.
It is a little bit odd.
I normally don't go sour, but when we were at the brewery, which we'll talk about later, even though now would probably be a more appropriate time to talk about it, when we were at the brewery, I tried your beer, which was a sour, and it was delicious. So today I went into my local craft beer spot, as I like to say, right in the basement of Grand Central Terminal, and I asked them what sour beers they had. They turned me on to Collective Arts Brewing Guava Gauche. Is there an H in there?
A Gauche? I'm not sure.
Okay, we want to go now. The way they described it is that this was going to be a delicious beer.
Okay.
That it would have hints of, you know, a lemony tartness, that it would, you know, there would be some, a little coriander, hints. But ultimately, it was going to have the flowery, bright smoothness from the guava. I bought four because they sold me on it, and I feel like I'm drinking watered-down soda.
Well, that is unpleasant. You do have to be careful with the sours. Sours are a very, they're a tricky little mistress, sour beers. Yes. Sometimes you get something delicious, like this Bubba's Sour Tea Bag. Other times you get them and they're just kind of, they taste like a shoe.
Well, yeah, it's weird. When I was visiting the Amagong Brewery in Copperstown, New York, that was the first time I had tried a sour. And after drinking Belgian wheat beers all afternoon, it was just a perfect way to change the palate a little bit. This beer is not hitting it for me.
All right. Hopefully, your next beer will be better.
But I'm also going to say this: I genuinely do not have a very deep knowledge of craft beers. I was late to the game on the IPA craze, so I don't really know much. I feel like I'm paying the price for it right now.
Yeah, that you are. Well, as always, we are looking for your suggestions, craft beer, regular drinks. We'll get the poll up for next week for Drink of the Week again. Give us some suggestions through Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, on the Facebook page. We now have a media player right on the homepage of our Facebook, of our website, excuse me. So now if you go to ronandbrianpodcast.com, you can listen right from the website. And as always, our contact us info is there, so you can give us your feedback on Drink of the Week. Let's roll on out into This Week in Racism.
This Week in
Racism.
So we have something, Brian. I hope you don't mind. I have taken some liberties this week with This Week in Racism. Kind of unprecedented, liberties. But I feel that it was necessary. Days in Dave got win number two against Mayor Teresa Kennerly, 67% to 33%. But racism was back in force this week, so much so that we have two contenders that I thought were so strong, could not decide between the two of them. Honestly, did not feel that Days in Dave would stand a chance against either. So we are sending Days in Dave out to pasture, and we're bringing in two new competitors that were much more horrible than Days in Dave.
Let me get this straight.
Please.
Let me see if I understand what's going on here.
All right.
We have a fair contest.
Right.
Where you and I put up what we think is the best racist of the week.
Correct.
To go against the winner, elected, picked, and selected by our listeners.
By the people.
And you decided this week.
Unilaterally.
That the winner, that last week's winner, Days in Dave, for those people that are true fans of the podcast and are regular listeners, make sure you download, subscribe, and review. He was voted.
He was.
This feels like Putin taking over the Ukraine.
It may be. I mean, again, we will get to these contestants in a moment, and you will decide if I've lost my mind, if I am drunk with power.
Got it.
I mean, we had a bunch to choose from in New Jersey, up near you. We had a man who was arrested after allegedly shouting racial slurs and assaulting a Muslim man while riding a train on the Morrison-Essex, New Jersey transit lines. The incident was a result of the victim not knowing if anyone was in the train's bathroom when asked by the attacker. Going down to Denton, Texas, there's an investigation underway there after a student accused Howard Palmer, assistant principal at Denton High School, of telling her friend to, quote, turn off that N-word music. Palmer claims he said, quote, turn that music down. I don't want to hear the word N-word in my office. Palmer was put on administrative leave while the school investigated the incident, found out just before we started recording here that it was announced that he will not be returning to the district to teach anymore.
Smart.
In Chicago, Illinois, the Chicago
Cubs. I like the way you say Chicago like Chicagoans.
Chicago.
You don't say Chicago, you go Chicago.
Chicago. Check down. The Chicago Cubs have banned a fan indefinitely from Wrigley Field after he was seen on camera on NBC Sports Chicago using a white nationalist hand signal behind analyst Doug Glanville. However, the team has opted not to release the name of the fan. Going across the pond, if you will, to England, Danny Baker, one of Britain's best-known broadcasters, was fired by the BBC after he tweeted out a photo of a chimp in a suit holding hands with a smartly dressed couple with the caption, "Royal Baby Leaves Hospital." Baker deleted the tweet and apologized, calling it a stupid, unthinking gag, but does not feel that he should have been fired for it. Coming back to the U.S. in Tennessee, a number of groups are calling for a reprimand of Jim Lammy of the Shelby County Criminal Court due to a post he made on his personal Facebook page that shared an article by known Holocaust denier David Cole that referred to Muslim immigrants as, quote, foreign mud, and said that Jews should get the fuck over the Holocaust. He has also shared anti-immigration articles, memes, and conspiracy theories. The judge has denied being racist or anti-Semitic and says he has the right to free speech. Shelby County commissioners have called for a vote to formally censure Lammy. Formally censor him.
Yeah, well, I think that's necessary.
It is, but it's when you really look at what a censoring is, it's like four steps away from being fired. So it's...
No, it's not even that. It's
more procedural than anything.
It's a polite, stern warning.
It's saying don't do that again.
Yeah.
It means we literally
cannot do anything less.
Right. Well, they could,
and while still being able to say that we did something.
They could. I actually looked this up. Censoring is a step above admonishing. So if you were to officially admonish someone, that's a little bit less than a censure.
Well, I'm going to admonish you for kicking Dave out of this week in races.
Well, let's see. Here is contestant number one this week.
Oh, we're up to it.
We're up to it.
Excellent.
We've got Wendy Brilowski, a teacher at Highland Park Middle School, who has been put on leave after a video went viral of her using a racial slur while speaking to middle school students. And we've got that queued up here.
I just walk around the room and I just pick on them. Because they're black. And they're the only fucking niggers doing any work.
So the mother of one of the students in the video stated that Brilowski had previously referred to her daughter and other students as, quote, Negroes. St. Paul Public School Superintendent Joe Gothard has vowed to take appropriate action and also apologize in a video to parents.
How do you come back from that as a teacher?
Has not apologized. This was the superintendent apologizing. The teacher has not been able to be found for comment.
Interesting.
Easily rolled off her tongue, though. That is the thing.
That was an N-bomb out of nowhere.
All right. Next up for contestant number two, we are going out to Nevada. This involved Riley Grisar, president of Turning Point USA at UNLV, and his friend Lily Saxton, who was a dance conservatory major from Faith Lutheran at the time. The video actually is from back somewhere 2015 or 2016, but the video just kind of went viral this week of the two of them supporting white supremacy and Lily using the N-word. And we've got that audio here.
Yes. I love these guys.
Dude, we're going to rule the country.
White power.
White power.
White power.
The white
power. Yeah.
Fuck
them all. Fuck them all. Yeah. That's right.
So Grisar has been removed from his position at Turning Point USA, while Saxton has shut down all of her social media accounts and released a statement claiming, quote, "That person in the video is not who I am. I do not believe any of those things."
So who was that person in the video, if not her?
I mean, she claims she was drunk. She was, you know, under the influence of negative individuals. She said that she prays every day now and she doesn't expect to be forgiven. She just hopes the Lord can forgive her.
Thoughts and prayers?
Very close. So we've got Wendy Brilowski going up against the team of Riley and Lily. Now do you see why I made the decision that I did? Do you? Let me ask you this. Taking each one individually, do you think Days in Dave could beat either of those competitors?
Yes.
Really?
I think Days in Dave can take out the teacher in the first one.
Interesting.
She just drops one N-bomb. Days in Dave comes in. Days in Dave is filled with rage towards... I mean, obviously, it's not the greatest of audio clips that we've ever had. I mean, we've definitely have done better. But here's a man in a customer service who is... I think I would go with Days and Dave over the teacher. But you want to know something? And this is the beauty of This Week in Racism. Let the people decide. I mean, it's very possible. You know, I'm not always correct. I'm not always right on this. There have been times where I've sat there and said that I didn't think what somebody said was that bad. Or there are times where I said, this is the most racist thing I've heard. And the person gets knocked out in round one. I say, let's, you know, take it to the people. You know, democracy is a beautiful thing when done correctly. And this is a perfect opportunity for you and I at this podcast to step up and defend the right for everybody to have a vote, a say in how bad racism is in this country.
I think the big difference for me is the fact mm-hmm. that she is a teacher, you know, influencing, handling young people.
Agreed.
In a school that is 60% minority.
Okay.
And this is her thought process.
Got it. Okay.
Whereas, you know, Days in Dave is just some old guy working the front desk of a Days Inn and, you know, East Bumblefuck, where Pennsylvania, wherever that was. Just okay, my two cents.
I like it.
But anyway, Days in Dave.
Let's do it.
Listen, and if we get an uproar from the fans, we will definitely reconsider. But as it is right now, it's Wendy versus Riley and Lily. Go to the Facebook page. Go to Twitter. Cast your vote This Week in Racism. Moving on. Beef of the Week.
Ron and Brian's Beef of the Week.
You know what I got a problem with this week, Brian?
What's your beef, Ron?
One ply toilet paper.
I was traveling
for work last week in the hotel I stayed in, and I think a lot of hotels do this, using the one ply toilet paper. You know, here I use Charmin Ultra Soft in the Ron family compound. You know, we go to Costco, we get it, you know, 300 rolls at a time, because right. I like comfort on my little tush. Not gonna lie.
Understood.
And it doesn't seem to make sense, because you end up having to use more toilet paper because it's so damn thin. Like, it just was very uncomfortable. Again, get rid of the one ply toilet paper. If I'm coming to your house, make sure you have at the very least quilted northern.
Okay.
All right.
That is a legitimate beef that I think a lot of people can get behind. Speaking of behinds.
And what do you got this week, sir?
False advertising in the alcohol community.
And what do you mean? Are you referring to your sour beer, or is there another beer you're referring to?
No, not at all. This beer is actually exactly what it names. I just don't think that it's touching me. Speaking of touching, your one-ply toilet paper.
Yes.
So I'm walking through the beer aisle of my supermarket, and I say to myself, you know what? I'm going to get Corona because we're celebrating Cinco de Mayo. So what do? I see the Coronas, which is the beer we had talked about. Mm-hmm. I could have gone with a Modelo. I could have gone with a Sol, S-O-L, not S-O-U-L. But I said, you know what? No, I'm going to brand specific. Let me stick with Corona. So I saw they had the Corona Light. I'm not a big light beer drinker, so that wasn't my thing. But then what I did was I decided, hey, you know, I see they have the Corona Extra, but let's go one notch more. Let's go to the Corona Premier. It had its fancy white and light blue with some silver lettering on the packaging. I said, you know what? This is obviously the step up from Corona Extra. What's more extra than Extra? It's got to be Premier.
Yep.
Right. So I take it home. I'm all excited to open this up. Slam down a shot of tequila as per our drink of the week rules.
Yes.
I don't want people to think that I'm just doing tequila shots for shits and giggles. Don't. But what bothered me was as soon as I told you what I was about to drink, you said, oh, so you went with the light beer. And I could not tell you the deflation of my hopes, my dreams, my experience. Just, you know, in talking about being a brand ambassador, I don't know how we pretended to get behind Corona last week. Because that was a shit beer. It felt like I was drinking it was a watered down beer, lacked flavor, and Corona already is a light beer.
Right.
It's
not heavy.
It's like drinking it's like flavored water, but it's good and it goes down well, especially when you're on your eighth. So for them to sit there and it'd be one thing if they, tried to, name their product, obviously you don't want to call it light. There's already a light, but they could have named it something other than Premier, because Premier makes it seem like this is the top of the top. Meanwhile, this was just, it was such a disappointment and it made me angry all week.
They fucked you. No two ways around it.
No, they did. It was terrible.
You know what? You need to call and yell at them.
I can't call them.
Just go all Sam.
If I call Mexico, suddenly I've got ICE agents knocking down my door, wondering what I'm doing.
Just go all Sam Jackson on them.
They deserve to die, and I hope they burn in hell.
Just go. That's all you got to do. But you're saying you didn't like the beer, because normally
I did not.
You like beer.
I liked beer.
But you're saying you didn't like this beer.
I liked beer.
Correct.
I do have to say, my father-in-law was over yesterday for a little Mother's Day celebration, and he was like, he knows about the beer fridge. He respects the beer fridge that we have here. But he was like, I'm going to have to drive home. He's like, so I need whatever your lowest alcohol lightest beer is. Sure enough, Corona Premier. And then he drank it. He's like, I don't think I'm going to be having more than one of these. So
there you go.
It's not just you,
terrible.
My friend.
They're
it's
terrible.
Not just you. But speaking of beer, we did have some excellent beers on Saturday. We were out again at Broken Goblet Brewing. We were there in October for Hoppy Halloween. However, a little change of venue. October, we were at their initial Bristol location, which they have now moved from, into their new location in Bensalem. They had Life of Agony in concert there on Saturday. What did you think of the new digs for Broken Goblet?
I will say that in terms of just a brewery, of a place where, you can go, it's a full service bar.
Yep.
When I say full service, I mean they serve only the beers that they brew.
Actually, they do serve others.
Jesus,
I know,
Christ.
You weren't paying
attention. Why do you have to contradict me?
Sorry,
can't
boo.
You just let that slide? All right. What I was trying to say was that they don't have like whiskeys and whatnot. It's all beer. An amazing space. Lots of seating, indoor, outdoor. I genuinely can see Broken Goblet's Bensalem location. I could see this becoming a destination point, not just for people who live in the area, but for people who are looking for a great spring, summer, weekend, after work place to go to. Just had a great vibe. Additionally, the staff that works there, knowledgeable about the products that they offer there, but also just what seemed to be genuinely good people. I had conversations with several of them, the bartenders, staff, and just everybody seemed incredibly nice. They hooked me up with a t-shirt afterwards. I ended up getting the death metal one.
Very nice.
Because they were out of the shirt that I was looking for, which says a lot about considering a space that has just recently opened.
They are solid with their merch there. T-shirts, hats, glasses. I think it's great.
But I would like to say one of the things that was the high point for me, the high point of the entire day was as a lot of our listeners know, I do work for the band Life of Agony, which is what brought me down there. But I was turning in the guest list to the venue, and I had put your name on it. And when and you were already in the building, relaxing,
yes,
waiting for the beer taps to open. And when I turned the list in, a guy who had not said a word to you up to that point, I'd seen no interactions between you guys. He saw the guest list, and the first thing he did was, "Oh yeah, we know Ron here." And he crossed your name off. And then after he crossed, he goes, "Well, he's already here, so he's good." And I was just, all I could think of was, has the podcast taken off so much that you are now a celebrity in the general Philadelphia cosmopolitan area.
I wish I could say that was the case, but it's just more a case of, you know, in before moving closer to Philly, you know, for a couple of years, we were at Broken Goblet many times. We're part of their beer club for a couple of years. So yeah, got to know a couple of the owners, Mike, who told us the awesome story about how they got the stage that is set up that the band was playing on. Bubba, who I think is the one you talked about. So yeah, mm-hmm. just a couple of great guys. Great little space for a concert. The apparently the stage, as one of the owners was telling us, was the stage from the David Bowie Spiders tour.
Yes, apparently his last Spiders.
His last stop in the U.S. was Philadelphia. So apparently they just sold the stage to the Electric Factory, which is a concert venue in Philly. A couple of years back, Electric Factory was getting a new stage, so Broken Goblet managed to get it. And if I remember, there was a taped X at the front of the stage that Dimebag yes. Darrell when he came with Pantera. Am I getting that right?
Yes, yes.
So that was his mark for his guitar solo, and electric, and that was the last time Dimebag ever played the Electric Factory. So the Electric Factory just kept taping over that, you know, taping that X, so it was always there when the guys at Broken Goblet got the stage, which they are huge metalheads. They love metal. They respect it. They love that aspect of it. So they taped it over, painted it, so now it's like permanent on the stage. Just a great story, great thing to check out.
I regret not taking a picture of that X.
Now, we were there for sound check. We mm-hmm. did not stay around for the bands because we're old.
Should have stayed. We should have stayed.
How are the acoustics in the room? Because, I mean, the sound check Amazing. Sounded very good.
Amazing. It was the thing that I found changing the dynamic was that the crowd filtered in.
Okay.
You know, we had a couple hundred people fill in that space. Was not jam-packed. Which I actually kind of enjoy personally. I don't like crowded shows.
Sure.
There was room for people to walk around, go to the bar, come back, you know, no fights, you know, it was just, but the sound quality was perfect. Everybody there that seemed to have a great time and enjoy themselves. So, I would have to say that it was definitely one of our, funner shows that we've done in recent years.
I mean,
also the opportunity to see you
of course.
And your lovely missus,
of course,
who shall go unnamed.
I did hear, someone put up a video of, the new single that they played at the concert.
Yes.
I mean, sounded good. The sound sounded good. The new single sounded good. New album, I think they said, is coming out this fall.
That's the plan. The Sound of Scars.
Sound of Scars. Follow up to their debut album, River Runs Red, correct?
This is supposed to be part two of that story. So should be interesting. I'm looking forward to it, along with a lot of other people.
You know what I was thinking? What I would love to see? I would actually love
what
to
would
see.
What would you love to see?
I'd love to see a documentary on Life of Agony. Because, okay. it, you know, in listening to you talk about them, and I feel like there's some tremendous stories there, not just individually, but as a band in general. So
very much so.
I wish I had the skill set and the money and the time to do something like that. But if there are any young, eager documentarians
I'm
out
sure.
there, I mean, wouldn't you want? I mean, you know a lot about the
I
band.
Would, oh, no.
But I would love to see that.
It's a great story.
It seems like it would be just a great story to me.
There are so many ups and downs, peaks, valleys. You know, there are times where everything is going right and it falls apart. There are times where things are going all wrong and they just somehow cement themselves, pool together, and climb up. There's the band members all are good souls. I know each of them individually. They all bring a different dynamic to the table. Just overall, a great aspect of my life.
And it seems like they've all kind of branched out into, you know, different things. They're not just, you know, Life of Agony. I know Mina's had some side projects. I believe as in Alan does the kind of the horror themed comic book or coloring books, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just seems like apart from the band, they're just a group of wildly creative individuals.
Yes, they are.
Well, why don't you get on top of that, Brian?
And not only that, but Veronica, their drummer, also drums for DMC.
I mean, she was, there were times that I thought she was just going to break right through those drums. Like, yes. She doesn't.
I have not seen her do that yet. I hold out hope.
So we did have some listeners that were also out at the show. So thank you guys for coming out. Thank you for acknowledging. I apologize. I know I made it weird for everybody because I don't know about you. I have this thing where I have a very difficult time. And this is my own thing. I have a hard time like accepting people's enjoyment of things that I do. Like, it's just very difficult for me to accept that people are like, oh, yeah, I really like the podcast. And I'll be like, yeah, they're saying that because that's what you kind of have to say. And then they'll be talking to me and I'll make it weird because, you know, they may actually be interested in having a conversation. Like, Billy and I were talking. And I was like,
Great kid.
And I'm like, yeah, he's probably only talking to me because he feels he has to talk to me. Like, it's just, I've got this thing inside of me that's just been broken for years, and you know, I need to get over it.
See, I'll tell you what makes me realize and obviously this is not the case with everybody, but in the case with some people, I know what I feel the determination in terms of, are they saying it to be nice or are they saying it because they mean it, is the degree of detail they go into. Like, if someone says to me, oh, yeah, no, I heard your podcast. I really liked it. It was funny. I kind of can sit there and say, you just glossed over it, and you may or may not have listened to more than 5 minutes of it. But when someone is sitting there talking about examples of moments from the podcast, multiple episodes spanning the cross, that's when I know this person is actually listening to it. And I also know that with the amount of entertainment out there, whether it's music, podcasts, TED Talks, whatnot, people have so much content being thrown out at them that I am incredibly appreciative of the fact that there are people that will allow us, you and I, to talk to them for an hour a week. Right. In some cases, we go over, but the idea that they could be listening to anything and they're going to sit there and here's another moment where I know somebody's being legitimate about it. It's going back to Billy. I asked him why so few people are voting in This Week in Racism by comparison to the drink of the week.
Right.
Because I assumed, and he had a great answer for me.
He did.
I assumed that it was because people don't want to attach themselves in any way to racism, that they're so afraid that someone's going to be like, oh my gosh, you're a racist because you voted in a racism contest. And what he said was no. He said that there's a lot of weeks that he does not vote in Racist of the Week, but he does vote in Drink of the Week because he's a couple episodes behind at times, or he's one episode behind, and he doesn't feel that that his vote should be cast if he doesn't know who the two racists are. But he knows the two drinks that we just put up.
Right.
There's no backstory to the drink. So he'll just sit there and say, oh, vodka gimlet. Geez, how many more times can that thing get thrown up? He has no problem making a vote there. But for Racist of the Week, if he doesn't know who the two people are, all he's basically voting on is a picture.
Yeah.
And that says that he takes this shit seriously, more than you or I.
Right. And Dom was there, and Dom, I think, is a great guy also. And he was talking about how he listened. He's like, first thing at work, every new episode, I'm listening to it. And then he was talking about a bit that he listened to that, you know, it was so funny. He's like, I'm going to hurt myself at work because I'm listening to this. And like, it is incredibly humbling. And like I said, I've got father issues. I get it. Maybe that'll be an episode one of these days. But it just, if I made it weird for anybody on Saturday, I apologize. That's just me. That's just who I am. I'm the guy that makes things weird. But again, appreciate everybody coming out. Appreciate you know, the kind words. Appreciate the listening. We were test driving some sample merchandise. We've got the logo caps. If you were on the Facebook page or the Instagram, you got a chance to see them. So people seem to like the hats with the new logo. So we have placed another order for the hats, and we should be having those in the next few weeks. When we get those in, we'll be letting you guys know how you can get yourself a Ron and Brian podcast hat. Brian, I believe we've got some stickers in the works as well. Is that true?
That is my goal for the next week, is that in a week from now, I will have a timeline. I will have a dateline. I will have some type of expectation for when we will have stickers and how we're going to get them out to our listeners to help us spread the word.
All right. So long story short, thanks to Broken Goblet, as always. Thanks to all of the folks that listen for their kind words. My assumption is Broken Goblet will have Hoppy Halloween again in October at the new location. Brian, I'm just going to assume you're in on that, correct?
Automatically. Count me in.
All right. Fantastic. Anything else to say about Saturday?
No, overall, you know what? I'm going to say this. I tend to be a very stressed out person. I tend to be, somebody that carries a lot of, mental weight in my head. And for that stretch of 12 hours or so, it was really nice to not worry about anything and just live life and have good friends surrounding me.
All right.
And I was really happy to see you and the wife and the Life of Agony fans and family and my friends, and it was a great day for me.
All right, good to see you as well. Let's see what else we got on the agenda here. Oh, that's right. It was the penultimate episode of Game of Thrones. What was this? This was The Bell, or The Bells. One or the other was the name of the episode. So, of course, that means...
When you hear the bell, you must call your men off.
Yeah, did not happen. What was your thoughts on the episode?
Well, I'm going to wait for the music to end.
I was just going to leave it playing. You want me to fade it out?
Yeah, why not?
All right.
How do I describe my thoughts this past week? It was it delivered the action that we were left, that we have been clamoring for this whole season. It was this was the episode where all hell broke loose.
I mean, compared to the Battle of Winterfell, a beautifully filmed episode.
Yes, lots of CGI.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, for the spoiler alert, if you have not watched episode 5 of season 8 of Game of Thrones, you may just want to pause, go watch it, come back in an hour and a half and finish this episode, because we're about to spoil the fuck out of this episode, unlike the internet, which is very respectful and not giving away any spoilers. But Daenerys literally torches King's Landing.
She goes full Mad Queen.
She levels the entire thing with her dragon. My thoughts on this were much like a lot of the other episodes in the storyline, is that the faults in the story, the glossing over of specifics in a way that has never been done throughout the first 7 seasons of this episode of the series, but now in season 8, they just seem to have, I guess, it seems like they now just want to finish the story rather than telling the story with the level of detail that they have. Like, here's a perfect example. Daenerys shows up to King's Landing with her dragon and literally burns the entire thing down before going after Cersei. Now, if one dragon can take out all of King's Landing, why the hell didn't she do this 3 seasons ago when she had 3 dragons?
Good question.
Why did she
need an army?
Exactly. There's no need for any of that. She could have just shown up with her dragons and burned the place down. Instead, she allowed herself to just get, you know, sidetracked by all these other things. When this was her main goal, she was never interested in any of the other peoples that she conquered and whatnot. I get the whole I get the whole, you know, like, now they're tying her back to her family history, that here was somebody who was, you know, the voice of the people, wanted to unshackle the chains of the enslaved. Like her rise was, you know, she was a woman of the people, and now to show that she has gone full crazy, now she actually attacks all of the people. but it just it left this huge gaping hole in my mind of, well, why the fuck didn't she do this sooner? Right.
Well, I read an interesting article today, if you'll indulge me for a bit.
I would love it.
So it was an article by a professional writer, someone who writes for TV, and you know, his take on what we're kind of seeing in this last season of Game of Thrones, you know, and his thing was is that you've got two types of writers. You've got plotters and you've got pantsers. And your plotters are the ones that just meticulously plot out every single thing. And your pantsers are literally people that just write, you know, by the seat of their pants. Like they write and they see where the story takes them. And apparently, okay, George R.R. Martin is one of these types of individuals, you know, and that's why, you know, that the book series that Game of Thrones is based off of just got so voluminous. Is he, you know, he wrote a story arc. He was initially supposed to do like a 5-year time jump after the initial story arc, but then he decided to fill it in, and he gets new characters, and he just wants to flesh out every single character, and that kind of is what helped get them through a lot of the first 6 seasons. Well, then they decide, all right, you've got 2 seasons left, 13 episodes left. You know, they turn over the writing to the 2 showrunners whose names I'm drawing blank on. BB something.
Dickwad 1 and Dickwad
2. Sure,
two.
We'll go with that. And so they now know that they've got 2 seasons, they've got 13 episodes, and they know what the ending's now going to be. So now it's their job to kind of reverse engineer from the ending to go all the way back to meet to where they finish at the end of season 6. And that's why now that they're plotting this out and they've got an end in sight, a lot of these storylines, some of them are not being revisited. It feels a little truncated. It feels like they're really rushing to get to the end of it.
Very much so. That, you know, you just described it perfectly. It feels like they're rushing to get to the end, where I think I'm not a Hollywood executive. I don't work for HBO. I'm not aware of budgets or whatnot, but it feels like they're taking 13 episodes or 20 episodes and jamming them into 6. Whereas I think, you know, and maybe it's because I've watched all the other episodes so recently, but it feels like they did such a great job telling this story.
Well, and the guy who wrote this article is saying, hopefully this final episode will be the payoff.
It can't be. There's no way it can be.
In 90 minutes, it's going to be very difficult.
From episode 1, Cersei has literally basically facilitated the story. You know, when she's not in, she is such an important character here. And to have spent the better part of this last season with showing with simply utilizing her to stare out over her balcony down onto King's Landing. I mean, I think she had about 8 words in the entire season 8. And half of them were, if you want a queen, earn her. If you want a whore, chill out for about 30 seconds because you're about to get this poussey.
And everyone was assuming, you know, Arya was going to be the one to finally kill her off. At the end of the day, poor structural design ended up being her downfall.
But
people thought Jaime might end up being the one that ends up killing her, but, you know, they end up dying creepily in each other's arms.
And another one was, I don't know if you saw this, but there was now because of the coffee cup last week, now everybody seems to be watching this show to see if there are if there are inconsistencies in the story. So apparently during the scene where Jaime finally finds Cersei, they embrace in a hug, and you can see his right hand clearly on her back. Meanwhile, he had his right hand chopped off and has been using a gold. But that's another, and this is where the story gets weak. They show Jaime getting stabbed like 8 times by Greyjoy, but somehow like he manages in like one swift like suddenly Greyjoy's dying and bleeding. It just felt very weak.
Well, speaking of,
but I will say,
yes,
I will say that in its defense, the death toll did certainly rise.
Oh,
this
it did
week.
Jump, my friend. So let's pull out our Game of Thrones pool, I should say. As you mentioned, Euron Greyjoy died. I had him dying. How did you have it?
Hold on. I'm looking for him. Looking for him. No. I've got it open, right. But I had Euron Greyjoy.
Euron's very, very bottom. We're going to go from the bottom up.
Okay. I have him living.
You do? Well, that's
I have him living.
That's a damn shame. That's a point to Ron. Let's.
Is anybody actually tracking this, or is this the honor system?
I mean, it's honor system. I'm tracking mine. I hope you're being honest and forthright.
I am being honest. Well, I just admitted I got it wrong, so clearly.
Lord Varys?
I'm not lying.
I had him living.
Where's Lord Varys?
He's above Brienne of Tarth.
Yep, also living.
A big
God,
shock.
I did so,
a big shock.
I did so poorly than this one. But, you know, here's one. There's a guy who deserved to die, and I thought that it was fitting that they did kill him just because, you know, he was conspiring against Dany in this. I felt that the death by dragon seemed unwarranted, considering that there were so many living people in a very close proximity to him. The way they showed it, you know, visually, that I would have thought that everybody would have been burned to death the way that the dragon laid fire down in that area. Imagine, apparently Varys is the only one injured.
Because if you look at how the dragon attacked King's Landing, just waves of fire just taking out entire buildings, but then apparently it can just control it and hit it. But anyway.
Right.
Let's see. The Mountain. We had the Clegane Bowl that everybody was waiting for. The Hound taking on the Mountain. Both the Hound and the Mountain died. I had the Mountain dying. How about yourself?
I have both dying, but I have the Hound becoming a White Walker.
I did as well. So point for the Mountain. It's a push on the Hound. No points there because you lose a point for becoming a White Walker.
Right.
Let's see. Going up when so we got the Lannister twins, Jaime and Cersei dying. I had both of them dying, but I had Cersei becoming a White Walker, so I only get a point for Jaime.
I've got Jaime and Cersei dying. I've got Jaime becoming a White Walker.
So I think it was pretty much a push for us. I am now up to 9 points in our Game of Thrones pool. How are you doing over there, sir?
I've got a couple fewer than that.
So we'll have to see.
I mean, who's counting? Is this really about a number? Is this about a number, or is this just about feeling good about ourselves?
I mean, I feel pretty damn good about myself right now.
Okay,
just at the moment. Just at the moment. So the final episode coming up on Sunday. So obviously that'll be a big topic for us on next week's episode. You know what else I'm hoping to be able to talk about next week, Brian?
What?
The new Howard Stern book, which will be on my doorstep tomorrow.
Really?
Yes.
What is the storyline of it?
So, yeah,
that explains why he's been doing interviews lately.
Yeah, so it's Howard Stern Comes Again is the book. And so it is basically a book about his favorite interviews over the years, some backstory to them, why they were his favorites. He actually announced this past week who his favorite interview of all time was. Would you like to take
David Letterman?
Close late night TV host, but not David Letterman.
He never got Johnny Carson.
He did not, no. It was very unexpected. I mean, if you have heard the interviews, it makes sense. But it was Conan O'Brien.
Really? What was the basis for that? I've never heard the interview. I don't know.
There are a couple. And Conan has some great stories from his time at Harvard and National Lampoon and all that. But what Howard said is, you know, he tends to have this thing where when he finishes an interview, he kind of beats himself up and he's like, oh, I should have asked this, or I should have taken the interview in this direction or that direction. And he said that with Conan O'Brien, he just felt that it was like one of his best interviews, that they had a great rapport back and forth. He liked the direction that he took. I will say both Conan O'Brien interviews that I've listened to with Howard have been fantastic.
Really? Are they short or are they long?
No, they're long. I mean, they go on. They go on for quite a bit. I mean, he tells two of the stories, and I won't bore you with the full, but he talks about how he created an award when he was at Harvard to give to Bill Cosby to see if they could get Bill Cosby to come to Harvard to accept this, like, fake award, which ended up being, like, a bowling trophy. And he, like, goes and picks up Bill Cosby from the airport in his dad's station wagon. Which was hilarious. And then he talks about Burt Ward coming to speak at Harvard, and he and his friends dress up as like the Riddler and the Penguin and steal the Robin costume while Burt Ward is giving an appearance at Harvard. He tells the stories much better than I do, but very good. And Howard also addresses the one time that he lied to his audience, which I found was very interesting. There was a time a couple of years ago, and I actually remember it, where he was out sick on a Wednesday and came back on Monday and was talking about how, you know, the media had like tried to track him down because he was out sick and called his parents and everything else. And he claimed that he was just out with the flu. Turns out he was actually had a cancer scare and had a cyst removed from his kidney that day.
Oh.
But I remember thinking at the time, like, I remember him going off on the media for, like, calling and bugging his parents. But I remember thinking, like, well, it's got to be the flu because Howard always tells us the truth. And he was just so freaked out about it. This was, like, the one time that he just didn't do that.
Interesting.
So okay. I will try and read the book in the coming week.
I will also try and get my hands on that book.
Unfortunately, we have some people that that did not make it.
Will not be getting that
will
book?
Will not be getting the book because they did not live through the week. That's right. It's your favorite feature. Brian, you've got some celebrity obituaries on tap, don't you?
First off, the mother we wish we all had, Doris Day.
This was a tough one.
The movie star that charmed America passes away at a very unripe age of 97, died in her home in Carmel Valley, California. She began her career as a big band vocalist, had several top 40 hits, even sold a couple million copies before she started to hang out with Bing Crosby and Frank Sinatra and started to run with that crowd. You know, she was known for her beautiful singing voice. Once she started to experience Hollywood, you know, her first movie, Romance on the High Seas.
A classic.
You know, she started over 40 movies, you know, most known for some of the comedies she did, such as Teacher's Pet and The Love Tunnel of Love, but also the musicals. She starred in Calamity Jane, April in Paris, The Pajama Game. Most people know her from her Alfred Hitchcock thriller, The Man Who Knew Too Much.
All right. Who else did we lose this week?
Well, this one hit me hard. Peggy Lipton. You know, not from the soup mogul family,
I
but
think
the
tea, perhaps?
Actress. Oh, good one. I like that. Peggy Lipton, born Margaret Ann in 1946. We lost a good one. Best known for her roles on Mod Squad and then coming back, reclaiming a career when she starred in Twin Peaks. Dies at the age of 72. The part that hurt the most to me is knowing that her daughter, Rashida Jones, is hurting as a result of this.
Oh, wait. She was Rashida Jones' mom?
She is Rashida Jones. And also,
so she was married to Quincy Jones?
Well, we don't know about married. We do know that they were together and had two kids.
All right.
From what I understand about Quincy, he was not a big fan of the act of marriage, but he did enjoy the company of a pretty blonde.
All right. And then one last one, and I'll take it, Brian, because I know you have no interest in the world of professional wrestling, but a pro wrestler.
Or Marvel. I thought you were going to make a Marvel reference.
Well, it could be.
But okay.
But this is actually for a professional wrestler. He had appeared in the Jack Black movie Nacho Libre, wrestling star Silver King, real name Cesar Baron, collapsed in the ring at 51 years old. Did not survive. I believe it was a heart attack. Trained a lot of up and comers. Trained WWE star Chris Jericho. So lots of accolades coming around. 51's too damn young to die. But that seems to be
not for a wrestler.
Well, for a wrestler, no. And that seems to be part of the problem is these wrestlers, they die way too young. Our thoughts go out to Silver King and his family. Brian, we'll get you out to a pro wrestling show again one of these days.
I'll be honest with you. I think I would have more fun watching it on television.
Probably.
I went to a pro wrestling last year, if you don't remember last
year. Oh, I know. You went to the NXT TakeOver.
I went to the NXT show at Barclays Center in Brooklyn, and I felt that because it was a live event and I did not have the benefit of listening to the announcers talk about the different character backstories and the significance of the fights and whatnot, it just felt like I was watching a modern dance where I didn't have any references to it. It was just people wrestling and watching people go crazy when they announce wrestlers. I didn't know who they were. I think I would have more fun watching a WrestleMania, like a pay-per-view at like a sports bar.
Maybe that'll be the next thing. Will Ron and Brian live tweet a WWE live pay-per-view. So are we ready to roll out a new bit?
Are you ready for
it? We'll see. So we're trying out a new segment. Hopefully you guys like it. We've been thinking that, you know, obviously people dislike the Trump administration. They think our country is horrible. When in fact, we have been horrible for a very, very long time. So now we're going to bring you our horrible history.
Horrible history.
And this week's entry into horrible history is the United Fruit Banana Massacre. Brian, are you familiar with the banana massacre?
Not at all.
All right. Well, this goes back all the way to 1928. It involves the massacre of as many as 3,000 United Fruit workers on December 5th and 6th. What happened was the workers of banana plantations in Colombia went on strike on November 12th of that year, making the following demands of the United Fruit Company. And Brian, you tell me how crazy some of these demands are. They wanted the company to stop hiring through subcontractors. They wanted mandatory collective insurance, compensation for work accidents, hygienic dormitories, and 6-day work weeks. Not five. They were fine with the six. They just didn't want seven. Increase in daily pay for workers making less than 100 pesos per month. Also reasonable. A weekly wage.
It's very expensive.
They wanted an abolition of office stores. What are office stores, you ask? They were literal stores in offices on the plantation where the workers would be forced to spend the money that they were making in these office stores where the profit would then continue to just go back to the company. Mm. They wanted to abolish payment through coupons rather than money. There were times where they would get paid in coupons to these office stores rather than in cash, and improvement of hospital services. So as this strike dragged on for about 3 weeks, it significantly impacted United Fruit profitability. They were losing a lot of money because, you know, bananas were not being harvested. So U.S. officials in Colombia and United Fruit representatives portrayed the strike as communist, with a subversive tendency in telegrams to the United States Secretary of State. So in response, the U.S. government threatened to invade Colombia with the U.S. Marine Corps if the Colombian government did not act to protect United Fruit's interest. So what does Colombia do? They sent an army regiment of 300 soldiers from Bogota to the city where the strike was going on. These troops then set up their machine guns on the roofs of the low buildings at the corners of the main square. They closed off the access streets and, after a 5-minute warning, opened fire into a dense Sunday crowd of workers and their families, including children, who had gathered after Sunday Mass to wait for an anticipated address from the governor. The exact number of dead has never been established. General Cortez Vargas, who commanded the troops, put the total at 47 casualties. Jose Gregorio Guerrero, a Colombian official, put the number at 9, with 8 civilians and 1 soldier. Gerardo Soto, who was a co-author of a comprehensive study of the massacre, collected numbers anywhere from 47 to 2,000 dead, and survivors and written documents put the number between 800 and 3,000. An exact number of the dead is difficult, as witnesses said the soldiers tossed the bodies into the sea, while others claim that bodies were buried in mass graves. The U.S. Involvement in the insurgents came about after investigations found official U.S. telegrams regarding the strike. Just a couple to read here. This is a telegram from the Bogota embassy to the U.S. Secretary of State, Frank Kellogg, dated December 5th, 1928, which states, I have been following Santa Marta Fruit Strike through United Fruit Company representative here. Also through Minister of Foreign Affairs, who on Saturday told me government would send additional troops and would arrest all strike leaders and transport them to a prison in Cartagena. The government would give adequate protection to American interest involved. A few days after, they talk about death counts. They refer to it as the banana zone, which I just found humorous, even though this is a horrible event. Here is a dispatch from the Santa Marta Consulate to the U.S. Secretary of State on December 11th, saying, looting and killing was carried on from the moment the announcement of a state of martial law was made, and the fact that the American residents in the zone came out of it alive is due to the defense they put up for 6 hours while they held off the mob that was bent upon killing them. Now, mind you, this was the mob that was peacefully gathering and being shot at.
Right.
I was justified in calling for help, and I shall welcome the opportunity to defend the position that I took on the morning of the 6th and until the afternoon of the 8th. And these are the worst. This is a dispatch from the U.S. Bogota Embassy to the United States Secretary of State, dated December 29th, 1928, says, I have the honor to report that the legal advisor of the United Fruit Company here in Bogota stated yesterday that the total number of strikers killed by the Colombian military authorities during the recent disturbance reached between 500 and 600, while the number of soldiers killed was one. 2 weeks later, another dispatch goes, I have the honor to report that the Bogota representative of the United Fruit Company told me yesterday that the total number of strikers killed by the Colombian military exceeded 1,000. So I'm not quite sure how that's an honor, but there you have it.
Oh, no, it's an honor.
It's an honor. And of course, United Fruit would then become Chiquita Banana, which clearly learned from its past, as they acknowledged years back, that Chiquita, a former subsidiary, Banadex, paid $1.7 million to the paramilitary group AUC, who have killed hundreds of Colombian citizens from 1997 to 2004. In 2007, they admitted these payments were illegal, pled guilty to violating counterterrorism laws, and agreed to pay a $25 million fine. Also in 2007, okay, the relatives of some of the 387 people thought to be killed by the AUC filed a lawsuit against Chiquita. Additional lawsuits were filed, which were eventually combined and given class action status. But in February 2018, on the day that the court case was scheduled to begin, Chiquita reached an out-of-court settlement with all of the families. So enjoy that banana the next time you have it, and try to think about the blood on U.S. hands because of it.
And I think it's important for us to point out that we're not sitting here saying that America is a horrible country.
No.
It is the fact that with you know, there's a yin and a yang. There are two sides to every coin. This country has done some great, amazing things. I love the fact that I live here, but I'm not delusional enough to pretend that we've never done anything that is sad and embarrassing, and things that make me regret the way we have treated this world.
Well, and again, I think everybody, like I said at the beginning, everybody's all convinced, yeah, that all of a sudden we've become this horrible country. We've got a lot of shady shit in our past as a country, which we'll be,
right,
highlighting every few weeks on our horrible history. I'm loving
Can
the
you
new,
play
I'm
that,
loving the new
Play segment. That theme again. Play
you
the,
want
theme
the theme again.
Again?
All
hear
right.
It. Hear it.
Horrible history.
Have you figured out that I finally learned how to use the echo on the Audacity?
Yes.
Between Drink of the Week and this one?
Drink of the Week.
All right, I think we only have one more thing on our list this week. That is that GoFundMe that was all the rage last year for people willing to give money to have the wall built. It was a Purple Heart triple amputee veteran did this Build the Wall GoFundMe, which to date has raised over $22 million. But can't really say at the moment what has happened with that money. Attention has turned to him since he just recently took possession of a $600,000 boat, which he claimed was ordered back in 2017, because, you know, you got to customize those bad boys.
Of course, of course.
But a lot of his donors are starting to think that he may have been duped.
No.
Go figure.
Really?
Go figure.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's anybody who's stupid enough to send money to an independent GoFundMe under the claim that they're going to build a security wall. Yeah. You are deserving of having your money stolen from
you. Well, and initially, you know, I think it was $1 billion that he was going for. And he had said, you know, if we don't hit $1 billion, I'm going to give everybody their money back.
Right.
But it didn't, obviously, because it's only around $22 million. And another spoiler alert, he hasn't given any of the money back. But he claims to have a board that's, you know, putting together a plan to be building things, but there is no evidence that any construction has started.
Okay, there you go.
A fool and his money are soon parted. I believe that's the saying.
Yes, and I've lived to tell that story many times in my life.
All right. Well, I think that's all the topics we had on our list this week. So, you know, as always, please reach out to us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, on the website. We need our suggestions for Drink of the Week. We're looking for votes for This Week in Racism. And if you don't like the fact that we sat days in, Dave aside, you can let us know that as well. Let us know how you like our horrible history. If you like it, it can definitely become a repeat bit that we do here moving forward. But most of all, you know, share us with your friends, listen, rate, subscribe, review, get ready for the merch that'll be coming your way shortly. Brian, what else do you have?
Just a statement of love.
As always.
Of affection. And I want you to know that you are worthy of love and affection.
Well, thank you. Because I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me.
Love you.
All right, love you too, man. We're going to roll on out of here. Check us out next week. Episode 55 will be coming at you. We out.